This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Before he committed suicide recently, British weapons expert David Kelly apparently believed Iraq posed only a minimal military threat, and he accused his government of overplaying that risk to justify going to war there. That's at least what a BBC reporter told an inquiry into Kelly's suicide this week. Kelly apparently slashed his wrist last month after being named as the source for a BBC report that a government dossier on Iraqi weapons was, quote, sexed up. BBC defense correspondent Andrew Gilligan's revelations have plunged Prime Minister Tony Blair's government into crisis. Gilligan told a judicial inquiry most British intelligence experts were unhappy with the Iraqi weapons dossier prepared to justify the war. Back-to-back suicide bombings in the Middle East have now killed at least four people, including two attackers. Nearly a dozen others were injured in the incident. Former Palestinian chief negotiator Saeb Erekat says the leadership has always condemned attacks on civilians, and he's calling on Israel not to allow these latest incidents to derail the continuing peace process.
The Palestinian leadership utterly rejects the Israeli accusations and finger-pointing to the Palestinian Authority's responsibilities, and we call upon the American administration to begin a process of de-escalation and deconfliction and to maintain hope through the implementation of the roadmap.
The first blast happened in a grocery store in central Israel, killing two people, including the suspected bomber. In the second attack, another person was killed, again along with the suspected bomber, at a bus stop outside a Jewish settlement in the West Bank. In response to those attacks, Israel has now delayed releasing 76 Palestinian prisoners who are scheduled to be set free this morning. West African peacekeepers are heading into a new outbreak of fighting in Liberia now as they try to stop rebels from advancing nearer the capital, Monrovia, as well as its airport. Liberia's government and one rebel faction are accusing each other of starting this latest round of bloodshed as the rebels made a big advance today, just one day after former President Charles Taylor resigned and went into exile. There are so far over 800 peacekeeping troops in Liberia.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Software giant Microsoft says it will appeal a $520 million judgment against it in a patent dispute case. Eolus Technologies and the University of California sued Microsoft, claiming its Internet Explorer violated a 1998 patent belonging to an employee of Eolus and UC. The jury sided with the plaintiffs. Traders and investors are keeping a close ear to the ground for the results of the Federal Reserve Board's meeting later today. Analysts will be carefully looking at the group's summary of how it views recent signs of improvement in the economy. The Fed's expected to leave interest rates unchanged.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The American Bar Association has now passed a proposal allowing lawyers to break attorney-client confidentiality to help prevent financial crimes. The Bar Association's policymaking body amended its ethics code to allow, but not require at least, lawyers to break attorney-client privilege if they believe that action could stop a client from committing a financial crime. Legal analyst Royal Oaks says the matter, however, is still by no means resolved.
It's not a surprise that the American Bar Association would advocate this reform in light of the Enron scandal and all the other financial problems. The question of whether this will be adopted, though, by legislatures and by judges is a different issue.
Incoming Bar Association President Dennis Archer says the rule change is in the best interest of the legal profession and in the best interest of the country as a whole. Many attorneys, though, oppose the change, saying they're concerned it will severely hurt the time-honored practice of lawyers keeping client information secret. They're also concerned this will leave them open to lawsuits being filed against them. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News. We'll be right back.
probably like us with today's Car Clinic Minute. What you don't see can't hurt you, right? Neighborly ghosts and friendly spirits aside, think again. What you can't see can kill you. When I come back, I'll tell you all about it. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Conventional wisdom says ignorance is bliss, but colorless, odorless, and tasteless carbon gases, together with visible byproducts of pollution, harm health and environment. Enter Walbro Corporation's Smart Tank, the industry's first electronically managed fuel storage and delivery system. What this means to consumers and to citizens of planet Earth is harmful vapor collection and carbon vapor storage within the tank itself, while providing fuel pressure as demanded by your onboard computer, saving gas. That's one green machine, saving cash and the planet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You are flat right out here in the middle of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. We're broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, coast to coast and border to border all over North America with the Sirius radio, satellite radio system, stream 145, Sirius Left, and also live on the internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and live365.com with archives at whiterosesociety.org. Thanks for joining us today. What an extraordinary day. Day 184 of the search for weapons of mass destruction, which apparently, and we're going to get into this in our third hour when we talk with Scott Ritter, is morphing very quickly under the tutelage of David Kaye into the search for weapons of mass destruction thinking. Were they thinking about weapons of mass destruction? See, they have now defined a program as having the intellectual capacity. In other words, if we can prove that there was one person in Iraq who knew how to make a bomb or a bug, we have proven that there was a weapons of mass destruction program, or the potential thereof. Day 184 of the search. What's David Kaye up to? We're going to find out in our third hour. Day 700 today. 700 in the search for that man whose name shall not pass the lips of George W. Bush. Perhaps because his daddy is George Bush's daddy's business partner. Who knows? Mr. Osama bin Laden, day 700 in the search. So much in the news. I'm gonna set it aside, though, and get to it a little bit later, because although we've been lately opening with, you know, what's in the news, what's going on, just some amazing stuff there. But I want to, what have been the consequences? This is such an important issue. And I actually learned a few things when I was researching this, and there, it's really worth sharing. I want to get into this. What have been the consequences to the United States, to democracy, frankly, to democracy all over the world? What have been the consequences of George Bush putting our government for sale to the highest bidder? And what can we do about it? How does government-financed elections, how does this program right now,
where Bush and whoever runs against him can get money from them. How does that work? Why has Bush opted out of it? And what's going on with this situation? What is the outcome? What is the... Why is this, this issue of who's paying for our elections, perhaps the biggest crisis that we are facing in democracy? Our quote from the day for the day from a British 19th century British politician and education reformer, Edward M. Forster. He said, "We are willing enough to praise freedom when she is safely tucked away in the past and cannot be a nuisance. In the present, amidst dangers whose outcome we cannot foresee, we get nervous about her and allow censorship." In our second hour, we're going to be asking the question, will the explosion of free speech zones as we move into the 2004 election mean an end to democracy? We're going to have on as a guest a fellow who was arrested for standing with good Republicans, but he had the wrong sign at a Bush rally. Brent Bercy, and boy, is that going to be an interesting discussion. But back to this hour's topic, those who gave money in political contributions. 83% of all campaign contributions in the 2002 elections, the last election cycle, 83% of all campaign contributions, and it was hundreds of millions of dollars, came from less than one-tenth of 1% of the U.S. election electorate. Now, a lot of those folks were not even folks. They were corporations. For example, here, this is from an article Molly Ivins did called Politicians for Sale at Low Prices. She says, for example, the top corporations that paid zero taxes from 1996 to 1998, including AT&T, Bristol-Myers Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, and Philip Morris, gave $150.1 million to campaigns from 1991 to 2001. In exchange, public campaign reports, they got $55 billion in tax breaks from 96 to 98 alone. Invest $150 million, get back $55 billion. Three times, as a result of this now, three times as much money comes from working people's payrolls as comes from corporate tax payments. In the 2000 election, industry pumped in a record $696 million from an article in Mother Jones here, just to elect George W. Bush in a GOP Congress. And not quite that much, but a substantial chunk also went to Democrats. Let's take a look at what folks are getting for this. What are these corporations getting for this? And then we're going to get into how it is put together and what we can do about it. This is from the New York Times back last year, March of last year, March 1st, 2002, an article by Don Van Natta Jr. and Nally Banerjee. Top GOP donors in energy industry met Cheney panel. 18 of the energy industry's top 25 financial contributors to the Republican Party advised Vice President Dick Cheney's National Energy Task Force last year, says this New York Times article. They go on to say, the White House has refused to release the names of the companies and individuals consulted during the formulation of the administration's energy policy last spring. But they go on to point out, but interviews and task force correspondence demonstrate an apparent correlation between large campaign contributions and access to Mr. Cheney's task force. Well, one of the Bush administration folks, the week of his resignation, just after he resigned, a guy by the name of Eric Schaefer, who had worked for the EPA for 12 years and resigned over what he said was lax enforcement of clean air laws. He was very upset with this administration. Says, and I quote, well, they elected us, end quote, defending the Bush administration in allowing the oil industry to come in and write the American energy policy. He says, they elected us. I would say, no, they didn't. ExxonMobil can't vote. They're not, it's... People in ExxonMobil certainly can vote, but corporations cannot vote.
What are they doing in politics?
This was a felony in every state in the United States up until the early part of the 20th century for a corporation to involve itself in politics, and now it's standard operating procedure. The Energy Task Force produced a report on May 17, 2001, says this New York Times story, that sketched out a national energy policy that was largely favorable to the energy industry. Surprise, surprise. And not only that, I mean, this was pre-9/11. Cheney's meeting with the energy giants and producing this energy policy for the United States led to a policy, you know, larger tax breaks for people who buy SUVs, more use of fossil fuels. It led to an energy policy, forget about conservation, that put us more in the pocket of Saudi Arabia, gave more of our money to Saudi Arabia, and they handed more of that money to right-wing Wahhabist Islamic fundamentalist folks like Osama bin Laden. And that money, which came from our expenditures on energy, which have been going up and up and up, courtesy of Cheney and Bush, our dollars financed 9/11. The General Accounting Office, the investigative arm of Congress, sued Mr. Cheney last week. This was, again, a year ago, to force him to turn over the list of executives who attended the task force meeting. He refused. It's, you know, that's kind of dead. But Judicial Watch also sued. And just a couple of weeks ago, they put on their website at judicialwatch.org three documents that they got. I mean, this stuff is like dribbling out from the Energy Task Force meetings that Cheney had with the oil industry that sure looked to me, and you can just check them out on their website, judicialwatch.org, sure looked to me like they were dividing up Iraq in March of 2001 before 9/11. It lists where all the oil fields are, where the unexplored areas are, and a list of potential companies to purchase oil from Iraq. In interviews this week, says the New York Times, most of the Republicans' top 25 corporate contributors from the energy sector confirmed their contacts with the administration. Three of the companies would not comment, however. The chairman of British Petroleum, for example, Lord John Brown, and other executives in that company, the 10th largest contributor to the Republican Party, met with Mr. Cheney in late February of 2001. The chairman of an Anadarko Petroleum, Robert Allison, along with a handful of other executives, saw Cheney on February 8, 2001. They were the 14th largest donor to the Republican Party, that is, this corporation, and they were calling for opening federal lands to greater oil and gas exploration and production, it says in this New York Times article. And then here's the kicker. This is probably why Cheney doesn't want to say who is at the meeting. And quoting from the New York Times, no energy company contributed more to the Republican Party than Enron. 1.7 million. They go on to point out, Enron appeared to have the most access to the task force. Surprise, surprise! On April 17th, Kenneth L. Lay, the former Enron chairman, met with Mr. Cheney to discuss energy policy and the California energy crisis. And on it goes. I mean, here, Lehman Brothers. You think Lehman Brothers, I mean, what does that have to do with energy? You think they're an investment firm ranked as the sixth largest energy industry contributor to the Republican Party? They own Peabody Energy, the world's largest coal mining company. New York Times says Peabody executives were among 30 or 40 industry officials briefed by members of the Energy Task Force. As Ms. Wong of Anadarko, the energy company that was, as I recall, the 10th largest contributor to the Republican Party, said, quote, we give money to these people to have a business environment we want to work in. Makes sense to me. See, this is gaming the system. There's nothing illegal about it. But is it right for democracy? Is this devastating our nation and our world? Is this the kind of democracy the founders intended? I don't think so. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, Steve?
Yeah?
I'm taking Nicorette like you said, but right now, I really need a cigarette. And according to my schedule, I'm not supposed to take another piece for 2 hours, so what should I do? And don't tell me to tough it out, because it's not going to be pretty.
Take an extra piece?
Good idea.
When a really tough craving hits, just take an extra piece of Nicorette. As soon as you bite down, it delivers the medicine you need. Nicorette helps you quit one craving at a time. Use as directed. Follow dosing schedule. Individual results may vary. Support program can improve success rate.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens, Good Day, from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're talking about what have been the consequences of George Bush putting government for sale to the highest bidder, and what can we do about it? Of course, this isn't something that started with George Bush. He has simply turned it into an art form. But Bill Clinton was very competent at it. Jimmy Carter was good at it. George Bush's father was good at it. Reagan was a master at it. It's not just one man. It's a broken system. But this particular administration has really, really pushed this. In 1976, all of the candidates in the presidential campaign spent a total of $160 million. In 2000, the total presidential campaign spending was $1.2 billion. Of that, where did it go? Well, I'll have to get back to that. I've got a break out of that, but it's on another page. Anyhow, so with the coming election, oh, by the way, 1904 was when public funding of elections was first proposed. It was proposed by Bourne Cochran, Representative William Bourne Cochran, and Theodore Roosevelt came out in favor of this in 1907. But in the 2004 election, the way it's going to shake out, there'll be $274 million spent by George W. Bush in all probability. That's the estimated total campaign expenditures. And this is assuming that he does what he did in the last one, which is not accept public funds for the primary and then take the money for the general election. But the Democrats will only be able to spend $119 million because of the way the system works, because they haven't been able to, because they haven't refused to take public money in the primaries. And in fact, you know, it was something similar to that in the last election. Any candidate who wants to challenge George W. Bush in the 2004 election using the public financing system will be outspent by more than 4-1 in the primaries and by more than 2-1 over the entire election cycle. Now, that's kind of scary when you consider that in 2000, in 98% of all races at the federal level, the candidate who spent the most won the race. Now, where's this money coming from? Well, these stats are all from 1989 to present. I'm going to give you just a few industries and what they gave and what they got. And this is just absolutely mind-boggling. Absolutely mind-boggling. The banking, securities, and insurance industries gave $576 million, 58% of it to Republicans. They got the ability to merge into mega banks that can speculate in stocks while benefiting from government insurance of bank deposits, a risky practice that has been barred since the Great Depression. The right to compile and use private financial, medical, and credit information from their consumers. They gutted regulation of stock brokerages, and they weakened the enforcement of the Community Reinvestment Act. This is from publiccampaign.org, by the way, is the source of these. A great, great collection of information. Wall Street gave $281.5 million, 53% to Republicans. They got the freedom to claim stock options as tax deductions rather than operating expenses, producing an explosion in CEO income. And steadily encroaching legislation that would privatize Social Security. It's interesting, when you look at the money the folks who are giving money to George Bush right now, it's hugely, disproportionately, massively lumped in the area of finance. On the last election cycle, it was energy. Well, the energy guys got what they want. We're in Iraq. We're pumping the oil. We've the Clean Skies Initiative. You know, they can blow more pollution into the air. We got the SUVs. We increased the tax deduction for people who want to buy SUVs or small businesses. I mean, the energy companies got what they want. What does finance want? Why is the financial sector pouring money, showering money on George W. Bush? Well, because if Social Security gets corporatized. They call it privatization. It's corporatization. If Social Security gets corporatized, these people are going to make billions, hundreds of billions, for their multi-million-dollar investment. You're in the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements, and what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Mm-hmm.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
With about 5 weeks remaining before contracts between the United Auto Workers and GM, Ford, and Daimler Chrysler expire, negotiations continue over controversial topics like job security, which the UAW had indicated was its top priority. That priority may have changed with regard to negotiations involving Daimler Chrysler. The UAW is pushing now to allow union workers to transfer to non-union plants in the southern United States. The hope is by seeding those plants with union workers, they can convince the rest of the workforce to join the UAW as well. If the scheme works, it could bring thousands of new members to the union, and the UAW is prepared to transfer workers in batches ranging from 200 to 600 people.
Public sector workers in Zambia are in the midst of a three-day nationwide strike today, pressuring their government to make do on its promise of wage and benefit increases. After months of negotiations with union leaders last April, the government finally agreed to salary increases and housing allowances for 120,000 public workers. But President Levy Mwanawasa reneged on the deal under pressure from the International Monetary Fund, which threatened to withhold aid from Zambia unless the government cut into a budget deficit. The Civil Servants Union of Zambia says it'll ratchet up future work stoppages into an indefinite strike unless workers receive their promised raises.
Just as South Korea's largest automaker, Hyundai, settles a crippling strike with a generous contract offer, workers at its sister company, Kia, the number two car company, are gearing up for their own walkouts. They, too, want a pay raise and a five-day work week and staged a day-long strike on Saturday. They've scheduled more partial strikes for this week and say if the company doesn't implement the five-day work week immediately, they'll start extended strike action next weekend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday,
Sunday,
for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I guess I'm dating myself. Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. And our chat room, if you want to drop in, a bunch of folks in there. Interesting conversations always. Some of the most well-informed, intelligent, competent, articulate people on planet Earth. And there are people from all over planet Earth. We've had folks drop in from at least three continents. To get to the chat room, go to TomHartmanShow.com or LiberalTalkRadio.com. Click on the chat room link, and it'll take you to the trade forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button there, and boom, you're in. Very simple, two steps. If you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. And what got me started on this is this thing that Public Citizen just rolled out. It's called WhiteHouseForSale.org. And a great site, or at least a site with great potential. And they announced this thing down at the Crawford, Texas White House. They had this 12-foot inflatable White House with a for sale sign out in front. Well, let's continue with our litany here. I just want to get through this quickly and then get into the meat of this thing. $318.7 million were donated by the resource extracting industries, oil and gas, mining, electric utilities, chemical manufacturers, and timbers. 72% of that went to Republicans. For that $300 million, they got $33 billion in tax breaks in pending energy legislation, a weakened Superfund toxics cleanup law, the freedom to remove the tops off of mountains and deposit waste in valleys and streams, lax regulation of energy markets, other regulatory relief, such as not having to close aging, high-polluting smokestacks. And we all get cancer. We get dirty air. We get, well, you know the... Okay, agribusiness, $250 million, $249.6 million, 67% of it to the Republicans, 33% to the Democrats. They got $180 billion for their $250 million investment, $249 million they give to politicians, they get back $180 billion. Now, in subsidies over the next 10 years, with two-thirds of the money going to a tiny number of the biggest corporate farms. Now, let me just put this in context for a moment. To finance, to publicly finance elections, at least at the federal level, the election for president. Okay, let's just look at that. Now, of course, there's other elections out there, and they represent a lot of money and a lot of time. But this is the biggie, and this is where so much of this money is going. Hundreds of millions of dollars. Right now, it's costing us, and this is with a lot of the funds are actually, you know, they're going to the candidates. Right now, it's costing us 50 cents a person per year. If we were to fully fund presidential elections so that none of these industries, by law, could give any money to any of these politicians, and therefore the politicians didn't feel beholden to them, we could stop this pseudo-bribery that's going on in Washington, D.C., and simply say, okay, the federal government, you know, the key to democracy is the vote. And the vote has to be clean and the candidates have to be clean. This is about the people's business. This is not about Enron's business. So we're going to have, we the people, are going to pay for our own election to elect our own representatives. A strange idea, but what would it cost? Well, if it cost as much as the 2000 election did, which was huge, it would be less than $5 per person every 4 years. Now, consider that. It's going to cost you $5 every 4 years, as compared with the agribusiness industry donating $249.6 million and getting $180 billion in subsidies. They're getting $180 billion back. That means $180 billion is going to have to come out of your and my pocket in tax dollars. Big corporate tax evaders, the top 50 corporations that paid no taxes in 1996 through 1998, including AT&T, Bristol-Myers, Squibb, Chase Manhattan, Enron, ExxonMobil, General Electric, Microsoft, Pfizer, Philip Morris, Walt Disney, WorldCom, gave $150.1 million, 66% of it to Republicans, 34% to Democrats, and in exchange for that $150 million, they got $55 billion in tax breaks just between 96 and 98. Plus perennial legislation to gut the alternative minimum tax and rebate billions to selected corporations. Credit card companies gave $140.2 million, 60% of it to Republicans. Why? Because they wanted laws to make bankruptcy more difficult. They wanted to be able to jack up their profitability. They didn't want regulatory oversight. They didn't want us going back to usury laws that said you can't charge people more than 10% as long as interest rates are below 5%, as we had in the United States up until the 1970s. Food meat processing companies and pesticide manufacturers, they donated $95.1 million. 71% of it went to Republicans. They got the ability to keep meat processing plants open, even if they fail repeated scientific testing for salmonella contamination, weakened enforcement of laws governing pesticide residues in food, cuts to federally mandated user fees meant to pay for more inspectors. The pharmaceutical industry and health care products, $90.1 million, 66% to Republicans, 34% to Democrats. Are you noticing a trend here, by the way? Got the highest profit rate of any industry in America. There is no industry in America that can earn the kind of profits. That is, they charge high prices and they have low costs. They have cash left over. We're not talking revenues. We're talking profits like the drug companies get. It is the number one most profitable industry in America. The freedom to charge exorbitant prices for drugs originally developed by government health agencies with taxpayers' dollars, extended legal protection of their monopoly patents, blocked consideration of federally mandated prescription drug benefits. The accounting industry, from all of this from publiccampaign.org, they gave $60.4 million, 59% of it to Republicans. They got freedom from government regulation. In efforts to separate consulting and auditing, allowing them to rake in billions, they gave $60 million, allowing them to rake in billions in lucrative consulting contracts from companies like Enron. And they also were able to shoot down laws that had been proposed by those who didn't receive $60.4 million from them, presumably, that would have made accountants liable for aiding and abetting fraud. What have been the consequences of George Bush putting government for sale to the highest bidder, and what can we do about it? Is this what the people want? In this democracy, of, by, and for, we the people, as Abraham Lincoln said? Managed health care and health insurance companies, they gave $48.9 million, 59% of it, to Republicans. What did they get for that $48.9 million? They got billions. They got protection from lawsuits by patients who have been denied needed medical care. They got the defeat of proposed laws that would make it easier for patients to choose their own doctor. They got the defeat of proposed laws that would make it easier for people to get emergency room visits reimbursed. And they kept us in a situation with 41 million Americans lacking any health insurance at all, not to mention billions in our health care dollars being spent on advertising, the redundant paperwork, insurance company bureaucracies. One-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Tony in Waukegan, Illinois is on the line. Tony, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, Tom. You know, listening to you go through that list of donors or contributors, it's really amazing when I talk to some of the conservatives that I know, and they continually talk about how the unions are at fault and how business just has to keep up with the unions.
Oh, yes.
I would love to have this information. I wonder if you know. Do you have any idea how much the unions give in an election cycle? Like, how much do they give in 2000 compared to, say, you know, what the – good Lord, I can't imagine. I mean, I'm a member of a union, and I'm a teacher, so I'm part of the AFT, American Federation of Teachers.
Good.
And I know there's no way. I mean, I can't imagine that we gave more than, you know, any of those groups that you just mentioned.
Yeah, well, the thing, I don't have the union stats right in front of me. They are out there, and you can find them. And the unions actually do contribute a large amount of money. I mean, millions and millions of dollars to the Democratic candidates. Nothing close, though, to what industry is giving to the Republicans. Not even close. This is why George Bush, even though in the presidential debate he claimed, I was just astounded when I saw this. Bush turns to Gore and he says, "You've outspent me up to this point, but I'm still doing well." And at that point, George Bush had outspent Gore by nearly $100 million, as I recall. I'm going to have to go back and get the actual statistics. But George Bush massively outspent Al Gore in the last election. And he did it mostly, as, like in this case, with corporate money. And in fact, there's a little scam to how he does that. even.
Didn't he have like $100 million before he even had, you know, had said he was going to run? Didn't he have like $100 million in his war chest? I remember seeing that on C-SPAN.
Yeah, like he raised $1 million last night in a 30-minute speech.
How much?
$1 million. 30 minutes.
Good.
Last night.
That's just a
today's
thing.
Newspaper.
I mean, we've got people
I know.
In this.
It's nuts. It's nuts. And you know, in our chat room here, Brain Shrub says, you know, I always start feeling a bit disempowered when I think about how powerful these corporations are. He says, you know, stop. I'm getting depressed. Well, there is something we can do about this, and that is to take this process back, is to make it illegal once again in the United States, as it was for the first 100 or more years of this country's existence, and make it illegal for corporations to participate in politics.
Well, you know, the problem with that, frankly, is that so many here's the line the Republicans would give on that. They'd say, you know, you people are, you know, your own stock now. You guys own mutual funds, and if you don't have your, you know, you're not going to have your legal right to say what you want to say through your corporations, because those corporations represent your interest, and therefore, you know, if we put this kind of
rule. That's nonsense, Tony. Corporations are not here to represent our interests. Corporations are here to make money. And God bless them. That's one of the, you know, that's one of the good things about corporations, is that they can make money. It drives American industry. It's a fine and marvelous thing, but they have no business in politics. Government is here to represent
you,
our interests.
I'm just telling you what they're going to say. I mean, this is exactly the line that I get from my con friends who are sitting there, you know, telling me that, you know, that, oh, they have to have this right. Oh, the corporations are just representing them as a group, just like a union.
Then they just do not understand democracy. Corporations are not democratic instruments. Corporations are absolutely anti-democratic. They're autocratic. They say, oh, no, we have, you know, the stockholders get to vote for the board of directors. Well, in reality, the board can ignore the stockholders other than the vote for the actual who they are. There's a whole bunch of corporate law on this, and CEOs can ignore their stockholders, and routinely do, by the way.
You know what? I would like to see the Democratic Party go on TV with a series of ads, and they just lay out, just go bones out and just say, okay, this is where we got our money from in the year 2000. This is where the Republicans got theirs. And just do a breakdown, raw numbers, and just run those ads. And
check. They need to do that, something like that. Tony, I appreciate your comments, and thanks for the call. WhiteHouseForSale.org, you'll find much of this information, and also PublicCampaign.org. Now, very quickly, how this system works. We already have in place a presidential public financing system. It was put into place back in the 70s, as I recall, in 1972. It was either 72 or 74. And it allows, I'm sorry, 1976 was the year. Here it is right here. And in 1970, no, it was put into place in 72. In 76, 50% of all the money spent in the presidential campaign came from public funds in 1976 in that election cycle. Half. It was perhaps the last relatively clean election we had. But in 2000, it was only 19%. Because George Bush said, I don't need no stinking government money with its strings attached to it. I'll take money from Enron. And so, you know, the consequence has been this predictable outcome. $5 per taxpayer every 4 years, $1.25 a year. Now, let me put that in context. That is, in aggregate, a little less than $1 billion to fund the whole thing, which is less than we're spending in 1 week in Iraq. We could fund an entire 4-year presidential cycle in the United States, an entire 4-year presidential cycle for all the qualified candidates, including the primaries, in every state in this nation, for the cost of 1 week in Iraq. And it, as I said, the system is already in place. What we need to do is speak to our elected representatives. It is amazing how they actually do respond when you write a letter to them or when you call their offices. Don't bother with the email. They've all figured out how to ignore email. There's so many spammers out there. send them a fax, call them, write them a letter, and you know, let them know this is intolerable. We're just not going to put up with this. We want our democracy back. We do not want the largest corporations in America controlling our government and giving us CEO presidents and vice presidents anymore. Thank you very much. We're over it. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people instead of they the transnational corporations. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, folks. Jesse Ventura here to talk to you about InPhone, the advanced, enhanced, totally modern directory assistance available all across this great country of ours. Just dial 888-411-1111, and the super-friendly operator will help you access phone numbers or movie times, even driving directions to the theater. So call InPhone at 888-411-1111 and tell them Governor Jesse sent you. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Another lending success story from LendingTree.com.
I knew a home equity line of credit was a good idea, but I didn't want the hassle of going to a bank. So instead, I went to LendingTree.com, a marketplace of banks and lenders competed over me, and I got a really low rate. A really low rate without setting foot in a bank. Good idea, right?
Visit LendingTree.com or call 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. For additional information or state license disclosures, visit our website at LendingTree.com.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left, and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheeled car over to the side of the road to speak with you. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I know that in the last presidential election, George Bush spent $184 million and Al Gore spent $133 million. Finally found that statistic. Both of them received $67.5 million in public funds for their campaigns. That is, that's a substantial amount of money, but it worked out to costing you and me, each one of us, 50 cents a year. 50 cents a year. You know, the little thing you check on your income tax return? I would like to have a dollar or $3 or whatever it is contributed to the federal, to the presidential campaign. We used to have a bookkeeper who did our taxes, and he would always check no in that. And one time I said, why? And he said, because I don't think that we should be publicly financing these campaigns. They should be getting their money from corporations. This guy was, let's say, a Republican. And so I now go through and I check it. Yes! You know, give my $3 or whatever it is, a dollar, $3. The new scam, this is something, the McCain-Feingold law said, and the FEC, Federal Election Commission regulations, say that if somebody touches a check and from another person and then hands it to a campaign, that person who touches the check, who handles the check, has to be listed along with the donor of the check as a donor, as influencing the election. So to get around this, what the Bush administration has done is they've come up with a system of pioneers and rangers, where the pioneer calls you up and says, I want you to give $2,000, which is the maximum personal contribution, to the Bush campaign. And on the lower left-hand corner of the check, write number 1036, or whatever the number is, which is that person's number. And then mail it directly to the Bush campaign. And that way the bundler never touches the money. And so they don't have to be disclosed. This is the new scam that the Bush administration is doing. This is what drove the public citizen folks, the WhiteHouseForSale.org folks, to put a 12-foot inflatable White House down in Crawford, Texas, with a for sale sign up in front of it. Has George Bush given away democracy to our corporations, and what can we do about it? Well, yes, and these are the things we can do about it. You're listening to Tom Hartman Program, Talk Radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from
you've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Rational and whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal.
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Yet another American soldier is dead and two more have been wounded in an apparent bomb attack in the town of Ramadi, Iraq. Today, U.S. military spokesman says three bombs hit an American convoy near the outskirts of that town. Close to 100 American soldiers have been killed in Iraq since President Bush declared an end to major combat operations May 1st. Two explosions rocked the Middle East today. The apparent suicide bombings at a grocery store in central Israel and near a Jewish settlement in the West Bank killed at least four people, including the two alleged suicide bombers. At least eight other people were injured. Israel has now delayed the release of 76 Palestinian prisoners in the aftermath of the blasts. Police say they both were the work of Palestinian suicide bombers. Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesman Jonathan Peled says today's events are yet another setback for the continuing peace process.
Every time Israel reaches out its hand to make concessions like releasing prisoners, as of today, we receive in return another suicide bomber. This so-called Hudna is nothing more than a code name for more terrorism.
There has so far been no public claim of responsibility for either explosion. The Palestinian Authority immediately condemned the attack, but a cabinet member says Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon's recent actions have provoked militant groups into attacking. The BBC reporter who claimed the British government exaggerated claims about Iraq's weapons of mass destruction is giving evidence to the inquiry into weapons expert Dr. David Kelly's death. Correspondent Suzanne Chislett's been following the story in London and says reporter Andrew Gilligan insists the former advisor raised concerns about a government dossier.
Andrew Gilligan said to the inquiry that from his notes he could confirm Dr. Kelly had told him that the dossier had been transformed in the weeks before its publication to sex it up. He asked whether Alistair Campbell, the Prime Minister's chief spin doctor, was involved, and Dr. Kelly replied, no, it was real information but put into the dossier against our wishes.
Kelly recently slashed his wrists after being publicly named as the source for Gilligan's report. The British government insists Gilligan's story isn't true.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
A new computer virus is taking advantage of a security hole in Microsoft Windows software. Windows 2000 and Windows XP are vulnerable to the worm known as Lovesan, Blaster, and MS Blaster. The worm gets into a computer, downloads code, duplicates itself, then searches for another to infect. Negotiations between Verizon and two of its major unions will resume today in Washington, D.C., that following a three-day break called by federal mediators. The Communications Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers are trying to ensure job security and health care payments for their workers.
Mom, Dad,
someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day. Don't like the sound of that?
So, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Memorial services to mark the third anniversary of the loss of the Kursk nuclear submarine are being held across Russia today. 118 sailors were killed when the vessel sank during exercises in the Barents Sea. Warfam correspondent Anya Ardaeva.
Navy flags are flying at half-mast, and a minute's silence has been announced at several Russian naval military bases to commemorate the worst naval disaster in the country's peacetime history. A church service is being held at the Serafimov Cemetery, where 32 sailors have been buried, and a new memorial in St. Petersburg will also mark the year since the sinking. Although the official inquiry into the sinking of the Kursk closed more than a year ago, relatives of around 40 victims say they're planning to petition the prosecutor to reopen the case. Many believe their loved ones might have been saved if the Russian Navy reacted earlier and requested international assistance to rescue the crew. Anya Ardaeva, Moscow.
And I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America, Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Ah, the family photo album. Always keep a camera handy to capture those special Kodak moments. Like senior proms, graduations, weddings, traffic accidents. Why? When I come back, I'll give you a snapshot. Want to know the secret to finding a shop that can keep your car running like new? Find the cleanest shop in town, where cleaning is top priority. Not talking about clean floors, but better shops have those too. I mean shops that have the best training, equipment, and chemistry to clean every air, fuel, and fluid system in your vehicle. Keep it clean, and you don't have to keep replacing parts. Find your clean shop at bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Now, don't get bent out of shape when I advise taking pictures of your car that's bent out of shape in an accident. When accidents occur, emotions run high, and details are overlooked, like traffic and road conditions. And those involved don't always see or remember the same thing. What's at stake? Who pays, of course? Keeping an inexpensive disposable camera in your car ready to capture the moment is no accident. One of these pictures could be worth a thousand words and a lot of dollars, too. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no invitations. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite. Sirius satellite radio system. If you have a Ford, Chrysler, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Dodge, Jeep, Mini, Volkswagen, Audi, Nissan, Infiniti, Jaguar, or a truck from Freightliner or Sterling, these receivers are a standard option. And also broadcasting live on the internet from radiopower.org, iamericaradio.com, live365.com, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You know, back in the 18th and 19th century in England, Hyde Park in London had a corner where there was always a soapbox where people could stand and speak. And this was sort of the release valve. The government knew that if they were going to... See, there is no First Amendment in British law. There is no absolute right to free speech. And they knew that if they wanted to have a safety valve, they didn't want people to revolt, they had to allow people to speak out, but not too much. And that would be a little too democratic. And so they had these free speech zones. Now, of course, Barney Frank recently, in a letter to, along with 10 other members of Congress, in a letter to General Adolph Ashcroft, said that he thought that the United States of America was a free speech zone. But no, this administration, starting with the coronation of George W. in 2000, almost immediately started a practice that had actually begun on college campuses about 15 years ago, and it's spread to about a half a dozen campuses around the country, of designating what they call free speech zones, a place where you can have free speech, and every place else is not a free speech zone. And we just have some, I've got some just amazing stories for you about this and where it came from, where it's going, how it came about. And our question, will the explosion of free speech zones as we move into the 2004 election mean an end to democracy? With us today on the phone, Brett Bercy, the director of the South Carolina Progressive Network, a fellow who has had some experience both with free speech zones and this administration's notion of what constitutes free speech. Brett Bercy has been involved with progressive causes since the late 1960s when he was arrested for burning a Confederate flag. The director of the South Carolina Progressive Network since its founding in 1995. He was arrested in October 2002. And I'm going to pause it there. And Brett, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Hey, Brett, I'm really glad you're here. Finish this story here. You were arrested last October. Why?
George Bush had come to town to raise money for Republican candidates before the midterm election.
What was the town there, Brett?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
And he made a multi-state tour in late October of last year. And when he came to Columbia, a number of people that are in this progressive network that I work with, it's a coalition that includes your usual liberal suspects, many of them having different reasons to protest the Bush administration, all of us agreeing that his rush towards war was ill-advised, planned to go to the airport and did, and we had signs protesting various things that the Bush administration were doing. I was the first one to arrive and was in line with several thousand people that had received tickets from the Republican Party to go into a hangar to hear Bush address them. And I stepped out of line off onto the side of the road so I would be visible to my protest colleagues. And I was approached by the police immediately and told that I had to go to the free speech zone, that I was a protester, and that I had to go to this zone that was about a half a mile away and around the corner. And I argued with them briefly, trying to hold some ground so I could connect with my friends. Fell back across another road and said, well, I'll be okay here. And they said, no, you can't be anywhere but the free speech zone. And by then, I was a good 200 yards away from where they were taking tickets to go into the hangar. And there were several thousand people lined up to go in, many of them with signs. And so they approached me and told me that I could stay there, but I had to put the sign down. Hmm. And so I asked the officer, I said, is it the content of my sign? He said, yes, it's the content of your sign.
Now, the other people who had signs, what did their signs say?
Well, their signs were supportive of various Republican candidates.
They were allowed in.
They were allowed to stand where I was standing without being told they couldn't be there and had to go to this free speech zone.
Yeah.
And
we
there was a Secret Service agent that was directing the show there, and she was instructing the police to tell, you know, to get rid of me. And my sign said, no war for oil.
Right.
And so there was a point there where I had to make a decision whether I was going to put the sign down or retreat to the free speech zone or stand there. And I was with, by then, three of my friends had come up, all of us being middle-aged or past, one woman, a grandmother whose husband's a disabled Vietnam vet, and she was terrified. She was in tears that she couldn't protest her government. And it made me mad, and I decided, well, somebody's got to say no, I'm not going to be put in a box, and that America is a free speech zone. And so I told them to do what they had to do, and they arrested me for trespassing on airport property, put me in the back of a paddy wagon and drove me around behind the hangar where I could watch Air Force One land and the president get off and go into the hangar and give a speech about how they hate us because we're so free. I spent the night in jail and got out, and 5 months later, the state dropped the charges. And the next day, the federal government indicted me under the statute that regulates presidential assassinations, kidnappings, and threats.
Okay, I think I just stepped on part of what you were saying there. I interrupted you, Brett, and so the state had arrested you for trespass, and then
Correct.
They dropped those charges, and so then Adolph Ashcroft comes in and says, no, reinstate them, or one of his colleagues. It was a state-level guy, wasn't it?
Actually Strom Thurmond Jr., the nation's
right.
youngest U.S. attorney,
right.
who issued the press release arresting me. I was arrested by
And so they arrested you on federal charges.
Correct.
And you're facing prison now.
Well, 6 months and a $5,000 fine.
Yeah, which is I mean, you know, one day in jail is longer than most people can imagine. And this is mind-boggling, Brett.
Well, I'm actually grateful for the opportunity to connect the dots that the Bush administration has been denying exist. And what we've seen since George Bush has been president is a more and more aggressive use of these free speech zones. And what we have found out, and we will use the trial as an opportunity to prove, that the Secret Service is instructing local police not to allow any people that are in opposition to anything that Bush is in favor of to be within eyesight of the president. Now, this we now have, preparing for my trial, three testimony from three police officers in different states where people were arrested on state charges on these free speech zones, where the police officers testified that the Secret Service ordered them. In one case in Tampa, the police spokesman used the term, no protesters within eyeshot of the president. In one in Michigan, the police captain testified the Secret Service ordered them, no protesters in front of the building where they can be seen by the president or the media.
Brett, do you think that this is a part of a Karl Rove plan to keep George Bush from getting depressed?
Well, what is clear to us is that the Secret Service doesn't make these type of decisions. They're soldiers that follow orders.
Yes.
Our contention is someone in the White House is giving them orders. And
yes,
we're optimistic that my trial, I'm the only person that we know of that's been arrested on federal charges, which opened the door for us to basically put the White House on trial for doing this.
What happens if they drop the charges?
Sir?
What happens if they drop the charges?
Well, gee, that would at least substantiate part of our allegations, and we would then have the opportunity to bring a civil case against them where we can have our day in court in a civil hearing.
Marvelous. Okay, so they have shot themselves in the foot. They don't have any wiggle room here. You're facing prison on the one hand, and on the other hand, the possibility that you could be the catalyst that could return at least free speech to the right to peaceably assemble and redress and petition our government for redress of grievances, as it says in the First Amendment, to America.
Well,
is that about it?
I'm taking it as a challenge, and we're doing the best we can to represent your rights, Tom, as well as everyone else out there that believes that America is a free speech zone.
That's great. We're speaking with Brett Bercy, director of the South Carolina Progressive Network. Brett, is there a website where people can get more information about you or what you're doing?
There is. The South Carolina Progressive Network's website is www.scpronet.com. And there people can read the letter from the congressman to General Ashcroft, and a very powerful letter that says that these congressmen want to make it clear that the government has no interest in zoning constitutional freedoms, and that being politically annoying to the President of the United States is not a criminal offense.
Got it. Brett, we've got Ed in Dayton, Ohio, has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, our number, and he has a comment or a question for you. Ed, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. We've got about a minute and a half left here, Ed.
Hello. I just wanted to say I feel a little bit guilty because I'm afraid I helped these people to refine their tactics by suing them in 1984 when we were trying to organize a protest in between the press platform and where Reagan was speaking in Dayton, Ohio. And we had to go to federal court to find out how we could manage to pull that off, and we did, but I'm sure they learned something from that, so I apologize.
Interesting. So you were arrested also, Ed,
arrested. What happened is that we knew they were coming because we had heard from people that we knew in Buffalo, New York, that they were using this tactic of trying to create a sea of Reagan supporters to appear on camera. So we went to federal court before Reagan ever got to town and sued for the right to be on public property, which is where this thing was being held, standing there with our protest signs. And we were
remarkable.
Able to do that.
Well, maybe that's why they're doing so many of these things on private property now.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Ed, thanks for the call, and apology noted. I'm glad to know that there's others out there. Brett, if you can stick around, we've got a break here, and then we'll be back in just a few minutes. Can you stick around?
I'd be glad to, Tom.
Great. We're talking with Brett Bercy, scpronet.com, and Uncommon Sense for the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
Mom? Dad?
Someone's going to try and get me to take drugs.
Want to do something about it?
You're going to have to make me tell you where I am and who I'm with every day.
Don't like the sound of that?
Tuck, you got to be the grown-up.
Kids with involved parents are less likely to try drugs. So ask them, who, what, where, when? Questions. They're the anti-drug.
Call 1-800-729-6686 for more information. Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places, a ray of hope in these dark days, and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Don't you love these laissez-faire ideologues who keep insisting, against overwhelming evidence to the contrary, that the magic potion for all of our economic ills is... globalization. Never mind that NAFTA, the WTO, and other acronyms of their globaloney have enthroned autocratic, secretive corporate fiefdoms to run over the world's workers, small farmers, the poor, the environment, and our very right to be a self-governing people. The ideologues say that their holy theory of corporate globalization is inviolate and must be pursued, even if it's a real-world disaster. But now, some of these very same zealots have flip-flopped, vehemently arguing against globalization. They are desperately trying to kill a bill in Congress that would open the global marketplace to the free flow of one particular product, prescription drugs. The reason for their abandonment of ideology is that this piece of globalization would benefit not corporations, but consumers. The Pharmaceutical Market Access Act would allow your family and mine to buy our medicines from Canada and a couple of dozen other industrialized nations that don't allow the kind of drug company price gouging that routinely takes place here. In those countries, the exact same drugs are available for half or even a fourth of the price we have to pay. The Market Access Act would empower consumers to get the best price available globally. The drug giants have gone bananas at this, enlisting the White House, the Republican leadership in Congress, and some Democrats, people who are usually die-hard globalizers, to try to keep our borders closed to cheaper medicines. Despite their political pressure, however, the House has already passed this pro-consumer bill, and the Senate will vote on it soon. This is Jim Hightower saying, unfortunately, the Bushites and their backers are in the pockets of drug companies and are out to kill the bill. To help beat them, call Common Cause, 202-833-1200.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Three chicks came from Texas with a banjo and guitar and a fiddle that could make you cry or set your soul on fire. Their mamas taught them to speak up about what they thought was true, and they thought their country gave that right to them and me and you. Now one night back in England, one of these babes brought up a beef about how she wasn't too bewitched with her commander-in-chief. Some folks did not appreciate how she denounced their man. These patriots rolled up their sleeves and took matters in hand.
Let's meet on the Dixie Chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks, so let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin, well, cowboy, that just goes to prove it can always happen again.
And again. Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks to Jim Turr of BlueCanyonProductions.com for the Dixie Chicks clip and the bumper music there. Brett, just clarify something for me. Lest there be somebody who really wasn't paying attention to what you were describing, or some right-wing wacko who thinks that what you were up to or about was to get in to disrupt the president's speech. You were attempting, as I read this, to simply stand outside the building. You weren't going to be in where he was. And anybody who wanted to stand within a half a mile of the building where the president was, outside in the public, on the public areas, with an anti-Bush or anti-war sign, was sent to the free speech zone a half mile away in a cage or arrested. Is that accurate?
You summed it up well, Tom.
Okay, so this has nothing to do with your right to interrupt Bush in a speech he's trying to give or any of that kind of thing.
No, I was a good 200 yards away from the building across the main highway entrance into the airport. It was actually told by the arresting officer I could stay where I was if I put the sign down. So it wasn't my presence that was posing a threat to the president's physical security. It was my sign that was posing a threat to the president's political security.
Right. In other words, they did not want CNN driving by and showing. When they had CNN drive by and show the picture of a mile long line of people lining the street as the president's motorcade comes along or whatever, out in the public area, not in the speech that he's giving, in the public area, they wanted to be sure that everybody standing there was either holding a pro Bush sign or no sign.
That's clear.
That's right.
That's clear.
That's the beginning and end of it, right?
Yes, and I mean, and that is the what we believe that if we get to go to trial on this, that we're going to be able to prove is a policy of the Secret Service as directed by the White House.
Yeah, great.
It's analogous to what Catherine the Great used to do in Tsarist Russia. She'd have her minions go out to little towns she was going to appear in and push all the rabble back and bring the middle-class people to wave and grin when she drove by.
Right, and Bush is doing the same thing. We're talking to Brett Bercy, director of the South Carolina Progressive Network. And was that scpronet.com?
.com.
Okay, great. Would you please keep in touch with us? My email address is tom@tomhartman.com. You can find me off the website and whatnot. Let me know what's going on. We'd like to keep our listeners up to date on your travels through the legal landscape here.
Well, I'd be glad to, Tom. We have the next hearing is the 28th of August, and we're looking for a trial probably in September.
Okay, well, let us know as soon as you know what's going on. I'd love to keep folks apprised of this. We got a half a minute here or so left. Anything quickly about what folks can do and what your hope is?
Well, I would think like the caller that we just had, if there are people out there in radio land that have had direct experiences with these free speech zones, if they would get in touch with us, they can go to the website and send us a message. We're trying to gather as much data and ammunition as we can to be able to confront the Bush administration on this unconstitutional policy.
Great. People can go to SC, as in South Carolina, PR, as in progressive, PRONET, SCPRONET.com. Brett, thank you very much for being on the program today.
Thank you for being there, Tom.
Yeah, I truly appreciate it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The environment is a matter of character in a new novel set in upstate New York. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Middle age, domestic tension, and environmental trouble swirl together in a new novel by author Roxana Robinson. The main character in Sweetwater works for a New York State environmental agency. Robinson says she wanted her protagonist, a woman in her 40s, to reflect her own feelings.
The environment plays a big part in my own consciousness, as I think it does for many people. So I wanted to write about something that was really important to me. What was interesting was trying to connect this larger abstract issue with fiction. It's hard to do that without writing a polemic.
The novel, Robinson's Third, is not a dry lecture about the world's ills. Instead, it's a study of the difficulty of a second marriage, the challenge of starting over in middle age, and the complexities of old and new family relationships. Robinson says outspokenness on environmental matters is just one part of her character's makeup.
You can't tell your friends how to think or what to do. And I can't tell my readers how to think or what to do. All I can do is present a character who feels passionately about something. And if it happens, it's something that I feel passionately about as well.
Sweetwater is set in the Adirondacks during a prolonged drought. Robinson says it's a special place, not far from America's most crowded cities.
It's nearly primeval. It's really nearly untouched in parts of it. And although that's true of other places in the country, it's very rare in the Northeast for a place to be as pristine and as wild.
Robinson says she's drawn inspiration from novelists such as Tolstoy and Chekhov, who wove social messages into their stories without lecturing their readers. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So if you ever get a notion to state what's on your mind, make sure it's something flattering or at least extremely kind, or you'll find your controversy quotients completely out of hand. Though you might improve your record sales and the quality of your fans.
Let's beat on the Dixie Chicks. We're too nice to use rocks and sticks. So let's demolish their CDs with a bulldozer or whatever you please.
If this reminds you a little bit of bonfires in Berlin. Well, cowboy, that just goes to prove we can get you once again.
Jim Kerr,
BlueCanyonProductions.com, the Dixie Chicks. Thank you for that bumper music there. Well done. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Will the explosion of free speech zones as we move into the 2004 elections mean an end to democracy, or maybe an end to George Bush's repression of the United States and our people and our opinions? Roy in Rio Rancho has thoughts on this. Roy, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, Tom.
The bumper
music actually spurred a couple of comments. One, God bless Merle Haggard. He's got a whole album coming out that I guess is supposed to be just wonderful, and he defended the Dixie Chicks and said, I didn't even know what they said, but damn it, they had a right to say it.
Yeah, it was all it was one of the women that she was in Germany.
What I'm saying is Merle said.
Oh, I see.
I don't even know what they said, but I defend her right to say it.
There you go.
And actually, I was going to call in, or I was hoping to catch the guest, and I kind of got behind there. You know, Bush did this when he was governor in Texas. They started arresting people out on the sidewalk. Anytime they'd be protesting in front of the governor's mansion. And that was, to me, I mean, I didn't need anything else. And this was 2 or 3 years before even they started collecting the war chest to buy the presidency for him. So that was one comment. Secondly, I was going to ask the guest, but, you know, with your historical perspective and everything, do you recall anybody that's had a anti-sign that has inflicted damage on the president? I don't think Squeaky Frome was carrying around an anti-Ford sign when she tried to shoot Ford. I don't think Hinckley was carrying around an anti-Reagan sign when he... Am I forgetting some of these assassination threats?
No, in fact, I think that, it's odd. They're not suggesting, and I was just looking for the quote here. I don't have it right off the top of my head, but I can tell you essentially what it said. There was a guy who was a fellow with the Secret Service who was asked about, why are you doing this by the press? And he said that we're doing this because these people in their protesting might get so worked up that they could step out on the street and be hit by a car. They could step out into traffic and harm themselves. So we're doing this to protect people, to continue.
That is so
we're
nice
concerned
of
about
them
their safety.
Protect those folks. It wasn't, and it just dawned on me, wasn't the guy that shot Wallace, wasn't he carrying a pro-Wallace sign or had a Wallace button?
No, I think he was,
something?
As I recall, he was hiding. If you're talking about Arthur Bremer.
Right.
Yeah. But
so anyway, just a little irony.
Yeah, I don't think that an assassin is going to run around with an anti-sign, So, yeah, you're right.
Now, if you had a great big I love Bush sign, perhaps you could get close enough.
Yeah, God forbid. Let's not even go there.
Then they just have to you couldn't even support them. Anyway, have a great one. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Roy. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Brain Shrub has come out of the chat room that you can get to at www.TomHartmanShow.com. Click on the chat room and said that, Brain Shrub, you have something to share with us from North Carolina. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, welcome, Tom.
Hey.
Yes. I live in the most wonderful city in the world, I think, Asheville, North Carolina. And
my daughter lived there for almost 2 years going to school.
Oh, well, then you know how great this place is.
Yeah.
Where do you even start? Okay, there's a lot. You can't swing a dead cat in this town without hitting an activist or a progressive or an animal rights activist. But a lot of people are very active again in opposing the war. Now, in the center of town, there's this large monument. It's called the Vance Monument. And Asheville's unique in that, unlike a lot of cities that were built, this is a city that was built before the automobile. So this center place is kind of like a park where people can go and protest things, where it's got a lot of high visibility, it's very safe. It's an excellent place for people to meet. Now, when the war started, people started a spontaneous protest there. And when they decided to march on the federal building, the police began pulling people off the sidewalk, Tom, and I'm not exaggerating here. These people were standing on the sidewalk. They cordoned off the roads and then began pulling people off the sidewalk, knocking them down to the ground, and throwing them in the paddy wagons. 2 weeks later, because the protests near the Vance Monument began getting so effective, they closed the Vance Monument Park down. They closed up. They put charley horses all the way around the perimeter of it, and said, hey, if you want to protest the war, you've got to go stand about 500 feet away in this other park, which was not nearly as good a location.
So they defined their own free speech zone, said you got to go over there and, yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was just
amazing. Well, and in Asheville, you'd think that they'd be more enlightened, but it's not, there are Republicans everywhere, but the bottom line is that, it's not even the Republican thing, I don't think, Brain Shrub. I think that this is the administration, giving the command You know, we will not brook dissent in the United States. Thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments and for sharing that with us. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our number. And Gizmo, driving through Washington. Is that Washington, D.C. or Washington State, Gizmo?
That's Issaquah, Washington State.
Aha! Uh-huh. Oh, beautiful country.
Hardly hear you, Tom. I couldn't even hear the conversation you were having with your last guest, but I can tell you're there.
Okay.
Listen. Did you hear that story that you broke, what, 2-3 weeks ago about the White House outing the CIA agent was in the Post-Intelligencer today?
Yeah, Robert Novak. You know, is Robert Novak going to go to jail for busting a CIA agent along with two folks in the White House? It was in the paper today in Seattle, huh?
Yeah. I thought that was pretty good. It's finally the mainstream media is going to, you know, catch on and start publicizing some of this stuff. And,
that's great.
Did you hear, I listened to Mike Malloy last night, and he mentioned that a fellow was shot to death in New Mexico or Arizona somewhere for being too close to where Bush was going to be in a couple hours.
Whoa, that's not a story I know about. I'll have to do some research. I didn't know about
that. Evidently, this fellow was drunk, and he drove around a barricade where Bush was going to make his wildfire speech, and I guess the special forces or something... Put a high-powered bullet right through his chest. I don't know.
Whoa.
But, yeah, I'm starting to feel more and more comfortable right now that Bush is not going to be reelected. That with the Kucinich on the weekend talk shows this weekend, he came right out and said that the Bush administration was corrupt and called all of them a bunch of liars, and I was sure proud to hear that, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's getting, I think, you know, post 9/11, you know, and hopefully, you know, God forbid there be another terrorist attack, although this administration has done nothing to secure our ports, nothing to secure the freight on our aircraft, nothing to help the first responders, police and fire departments. In fact, they're siphoning funds away from these things in order to fund their tax cuts for the rich, and they're securing the oil in Iraq for the Halliburton Corporation.
It's amazing to me that more, you know, Republicans just fall in line on all this crap, you know. Hey, listen, I heard you said you're going to have Ritter on in your last hour.
Yeah, he's going to be on in about 20 minutes.
Well, cool. Ask him if he's going to pursue that lawsuit against Hannity, because Hannity came right out and called him a liar on his show one day. I'm really interested if he's pursuing that.
You mean as in Sean Hannity?
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay. I will ask him.
Thank
you very much, Gizmo.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks for calling. Keep driving safely. All righty. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. Will the explosion of free speech zones as we move into the 2004 election mean an end to democracy? What is the hope here? We've got Brent out there who's pursuing this lawsuit that's going to expose the policies of this administration. Here's another example of this. Regis T. Sable. This is on a website, anewdeale-zine.com. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, /free_speech.htm. It says, I got a firsthand lesson on Labor Day on what the right of freedom of speech and assembly means under the regime of George W. Bush. Americans who support Bush and his policies can raise signs in his praise and line the streets when his limousine passes by. Now, we're not talking about a speech that Bush has given. We're not talking about getting into a private building. This is the street. Americans who do not support Bush and his policies must stay far away from the president by judicial decree or risk arrest. There was a picnic sponsored by the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners in Neville Island, Pennsylvania. This is the only labor union that endorsed Bush. Regis Sable, he says, while between 200 and 300 invited guests filed into the picnic grounds, police ordered between 60 and 70 protesters. By the way, he's a reporter. He's there to report on this. 60 or 70 to stay four blocks away inside a sun-baked chain-link surrounded fence-surrounded park. Anyone with a protest sign who stood 1 foot outside that fence would be arrested. A 65-year-old man who did stand just outside the fence with a sign was, in fact, arrested along with his sister, who came to his assistance when Allegheny County police put handcuffs on him. And this was 2 hours before Bush and his limousines arrived. So anyhow, this Regis says, as we walked down the street, we saw a number of people with signs supporting Bush. See, they had been directed to the free speech zone four blocks away. When we got to the free speech zone, one of about a dozen state, county, and township police officers directed us to the entrance and told us we had to stay behind the fence. When I asked the officer why we were not allowed on the sidewalk like the people walking to the picnic and residents holding pro-Bush signs, he simply said, orders. So there were three groups, apparently, who were allowed into this thing to hear Bush speak. There was members of the Carpenters Union, there were GOP candidates, and a third group consisted of local residents. One of them, a woman named Mary, told me that Secret Service agents knocked on the doors of all the houses near the picnic area. The residents had two choices, accept the tickets or face a form of house arrest. Speaking of Catherine the Great. He goes on to say, after interviewing a number of protesters, I walked outside the gate at the far end of the park into the adjacent parking lot. I wanted to get a few shots from the opposite side of the fence of the protesters with their signs. As I began shooting pictures, a state policeman walked directly toward me from the fence. He asked me what I was doing outside the fence. When I told him I was a journalist covering the protest, the officer politely but firmly told me I had to return to the free speech zone. He escorted me back to the entrance. About 15 minutes before the Bush motorcade was scheduled to arrive, two county policemen entered the free speech zone. This is this cage, blocks, four blocks away from the event, and approached the protesters. One of the officers donned black leather gloves in the nearly 90-degree heat. I don't know why he thought he needed to wear gloves. Perhaps he thought the 72-year-old woman might attack him with her sign, or the two girl rappers might unleash a barrage of anti-Bush hip-hop into each ear. He says, anyhow, led by a phalanx of motorcycle policemen, the Bush motorcade zipped past the free speech zone, the view inside two presidential limousines obscured by the smoke-tinted glass. As fast as the motorcade was moving, I don't even know if Bush saw the free speech zone. The entourage did slow down, however, as it got near the picnic site, which no doubt gave the guest of honor the opportunity to see the signs telling him how great he was and how much he was loved. And then there was this one guy who was with Citizens for Elected Government, Michael Rechtenwald. He was carrying a sign for his group. Simply said, Citizens for Legitimate Government. No inflammatory phrases, no insults, no anti-Bush, nothing. Within minutes, an angry-looking Secret Service agent in a blue suit and two uniformed police officers bore down on him. Unlike the uniformed police I had dealt with thus far, this man was not polite. You know where the protest area is, he told Rechtenwald. You know where you're supposed to be. When Rechtenwald quietly said he was merely exercising his First Amendment rights, the Secret Service agent replied, now you are really pushing it. The agent warned Rechtenwald in no uncertain terms that unless he left the area, he was this close to being arrested for violating a federal protection order, a felony offense. The agent then told Rechtenwald that two state troopers would escort him back to, quote, the pen, end quote, and that if he said a single word, he would be arrested on a felony charge. So Rechtenwald said, if I say a single thing, these guys will arrest me? Yes, declared the agent. So Rechtenwald went back into the cage. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Ron in Maryland is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Ron.
How's it going, Tom?
I am great. All is well here. We're working on restoring and reclaiming democracy for the United States of America. How about you, Ron?
Well, I am down on that idea. I have a feeling it's going to be a pretty difficult task, though. You know, I'm familiar with a lot of the stuff that you've written, and I'm familiar with Brett's situation through some of the literature I've read. And just wanted to support you both real quick. But something that I've kind of been thinking about recently about protesting in general. I don't want to sound like really negative or anything, but it's kind of not very productive at this point in time.
Why not?
Well, it's the idea of protest is either one, generate enough public outcry through the media to have your issue heard in a fair light. And I don't think the media is upholding their end of the bargain on that.
Yeah, but it's still, you know, change, Ron, change never happens in the United States or anywhere else in the world on a top-down basis. And just because we can't get to CBS
doesn't mean
other people in the community aren't noticing what's going on and they're not being affected by it. I think protest is vital.
No, I do too, but I'm just questioning
its viability at this point in time, because the other possibility is, you know, people standing out in the streets getting ready to, you know, overrun the Capitol. You know, there has to be fear by the administration or by the people in power in order for that to work.
I don't think we need a revolution. I think we do need protests. You know, the two things that the founders did that were very effective was, number one, they had committees of correspondence. They got together groups of people who on an organized basis wrote letters to the editors of newspapers, and that actually changed things, both with the American Revolution and with the women's suffrage movement. And secondly, they engaged in outspoken protest, and they continued in the face even of guns and things. I recommend that people continue to protest and speak out. I understand your concern, Ron, and I understand where you're coming from, but I think we have to push through that. Uncommon Sense in the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
LendingTree.com presents How to Make Your Big Debt, Small Debt. 1. Get all your debts together.
Okay, got them. Stacks piling.
2. Consolidate your debts into one low monthly payment with a debt consolidation loan at LendingTree.com, where banks compete and you choose the loan that's right for you. To consolidate your debt, call 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com.
Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
You hear that? Doug made his confession that he used hair color.
Yeah, expecting to make it the treatise of the last month. Aren't you guys sweet?
I would recommend sticking with one color, however. Each month you'd have
I
want to
see you try the afro stuff.
Yeah, right. I'm going to do that.
I decided that it is not the color of the hair, but the head that it stuck to that's important.
Doug Stephens, good day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're going to kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on.
Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. We've got two calls and we got 3 minutes here left in the show, and then at the top of the hour we're going to Scott Ritter, so I want to get through these real quick. Lenny in Santa Fe and Greg in Los Alamos. Lenny, welcome to the program. Sorry to hurry it around along here, but you had a comment.
Okay. Thank you very much for being a voice out there in the wilderness, and I want to encourage people that one way to still do the free speech thing is to call the White House comment line and tell the people there what you really think.
There you go. Okay. Well said, right. Lenny. Thank you. I also encourage people to call their elected representatives, not just the White House, but the White House. Sure, call the White House also. Greg in Los Alamos, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Hey, Greg.
I was at the 1968 Democratic Convention, and I can tell you that one lone protester may not be able to get his point across, but a vast number of them will sure draw a lot of attention. And whereas I can't advocate any violence, you know, use Gandhi's methods, and just a wave of people will sure get their point across.
Yeah, and the protesters at the 68th Democratic Convention, many suggest, actually changed history. That was the turning point in the tide of public opinion with regard to the Vietnam War.
It was a turning point in my life.
Yeah, for many of us. Greg, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your sharing that. Bart is a great example of how change happens from the ground up, not the top. Or Brett, rather, is a great example of how change happens from the ground up, not from the top down. If we want to change the United States, as Lenny suggested, contact your elected representatives. That we live in a constitutionally limited republic, a democracy, where we have elected, and in one case, somebody selected for us, but anyway, we have elected these people to represent us in our interests. Speak to them. Contact them. Write letters to them. Send them postcards. Call them. Send them faxes. Send them emails if it's possible. Some of their websites make it possible. It's interesting. I send emails to my senators here in Vermont, and I actually get personal letters back. I know in other states it's getting more and more difficult. But get out there and participate in this extraordinary democracy that we have here in the United States, and perhaps we can turn this nation back into something more democratic and more egalitarian and turn away from the failed policies of Catherine the Great and the imperial executive branch. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stick around. We'll be back after the news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Before he committed suicide recently, British weapons expert David Kelly apparently believed Iraq posed only a minimal military threat, and he accused his government of overplaying that risk to justify going to war there. That's at least what a BBC reporter told an inquiry into Kelly's suicide this week. Kelly apparently slashed his wrist last month after being named as the source for a BBC report that a government dossier on Iraqi weapons was, quote, sexed up. BBC defense correspondent Andrew Gilligan's revelations have plunged Prime Minister Tony Blair's government into crisis. Gilligan told a judicial inquiry most British intelligence experts were unhappy with the Iraqi weapons dossier prepared to justify the war. Back-to-back suicide bombings in the Middle East have now killed at least four people, including two attackers. Nearly a dozen others were injured in the incident. Former Palestinian chief negotiator Saeb Erekat says the leadership has always condemned attacks on civilians, and he's calling on Israel not to allow these latest incidents to derail the continuing peace process.
The Palestinian leadership utterly rejects the Israeli accusations and finger-pointing to the Palestinian authorities' responsibilities, and we call upon the American administration to begin a process of de-escalation and deconfliction and to maintain hope through the implementation of the roadmap.
The first blast happened in a grocery store in central Israel, killing two people, including the suspected bomber. In the second attack, another person was killed, again along with the suspected bomber, at a bus stop outside a Jewish settlement in the West Bank. In response to those attacks, Israel has now delayed releasing 76 Palestinian prisoners who are scheduled to be set free this morning. West African peacekeepers are heading into a new outbreak of fighting in Liberia now as they try to stop rebels from advancing near the capital, Monrovia, as well as its airport. Liberia's government and one rebel faction are accusing each other of starting this latest round of bloodshed as the rebels made a big advance today, just one day after former President Charles Taylor resigned and went into exile. There are so far over 800 peacekeeping troops in Liberia.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Because I look like doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
Software giant Microsoft says it will appeal a $520 million judgment against it in a patent dispute case. Eolus Technologies and the University of California sued Microsoft, claiming its Internet Explorer violated a 1998 patent belonging to an employee of Eolus and UC. The jury sided with the plaintiffs. Traders and investors are keeping a close ear to the ground for the results of the Federal Reserve Board's meeting later today. Analysts will be carefully looking at the group's summary of how it views recent signs of improvement in the economy. The Fed's expected to leave interest rates unchanged.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The American Bar Association has now passed a proposal allowing lawyers to break attorney-client confidentiality to help prevent financial crimes. The Bar Association's policymaking body amended its ethics code to allow, but not require at least, lawyers to break attorney-client privilege if they believe that action could stop a client from committing a financial crime. Legal analyst Royal Oaks says the matter, however, is still by no means resolved.
It's not a surprise that the American Bar Association would advocate this reform in light of the Enron scandal and all the other financial problems. The question of whether this will be adopted, though, by legislatures and by judges is a different issue.
Incoming Bar Association President Dennis Archer says the rule change is in the best interest of the legal profession and in the best interest of the country as a whole. Many attorneys, though, oppose the change, saying they're concerned it will severely hurt the time-honored practice of lawyers keeping client information secret. They're also concerned this will leave them open to lawsuits being filed against them. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. There's that clicking noise again. If it sounds like Riverdance is performing under your hood, you could be in for some expensive repairs. I'll be back in a snap and tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. That click-click isn't Riverdance, but it could be a malfunctioning tappet. Like doors open and close, letting people into a club, tappets open and close, letting air into your engine's cylinders. To move efficiently, tappets use engine oil for lubrication, and there's the potential problem. Debris in contaminated oil not only causes tappets to click, it also piggybacks with the oil into all engine parts. Bottom line, expensive repairs. So before you hear your dollars clicking away, schedule oil changes regularly. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back to our program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming live on the internet from radiopower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, and various other internet radio stations, and with archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937. You can drop into our chat room by going to liberaltalkradio.com and clicking on the chat links, and that'll get you into there. We have this interesting story here by Robert Novak in the Sun-Times yesterday, the day before. He says, former international weapons inspector David Kay, now seeking Iraqi weapons of mass destruction for the Pentagon, has privately reported successes that are planned to be revealed to the public in mid-September. Kay has told his superior he has found substantial evidence of biological weapons in Iraq, plus considerable missile development. He has been less successful in locating chemical weapons and has not yet begun a substantial effort to locate progress toward nuclear arms. Senior officials in the Bush administration believe Kay's weapons discoveries should have been revealed as they were made. However, a decision approved by President Bush was made to wait until more was discovered and then announce it probably in September. What is going on here? We have on the program today a man referred to by the New York Times as the most famous renegade Marine officer since Oliver North. Actually, Scott Ritter, who I hold in much higher esteem than Oliver North, confronted both Washington and Saddam Hussein in 1998 as U.N. weapons inspector. He's a former Marine captain who served as chief of the Concealment Investigations Unit in Iraq for the United Nations Special Commission, UNSCOM, from 1991 to 1998, and the author of Endgame, Solving the Iraqi Problem Once and for All. Colonel Ritter, Scott Ritter, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I said Colonel Captain, right?
Yeah. Thanks for the promotion.
Yeah. Well, they're easy here, but they're just
tougher
getting a captain.
Military, yeah,
yeah, is an accomplishment out there in the real military world. What do you think is going on with this? Bob Novak leaking this thing that David Kaye. I saw you discussing or debating David Kaye on some TV. I think it was on Faux News, and you pointed out that he had in some way actually harmed or sabotaged your investigations, and he was working for the CIA or something. Am I remembering all that right?
Well, not David. I mean, David Kaye, the thing about David Kaye is that he served for a very short time as an inspector. He did a very good job. He was very aggressive. He participated in three inspections, two of them in 1991, one at the beginning of 1992, and then he left his job. And while he did a great job while he was there, he knows absolutely nothing about the work that transpired since February 1992, and it was considerable. The bulk of our disarmament work took place after that time. All of our investigative successes, took place after that time, and the destruction of the Iraqi weapons programs took place after that time. So I found it somewhat disingenuous for David Kaye to be out there on the news networks talking about a weapons inspection process that, frankly speaking, he knew absolutely nothing about because it had radically transformed since the time he left. I think that's pretty much where I was coming from on David Kaye. He's a man who knows a little bit about the uranium recycling process, and that's it. He's not a weapons expert. He's not a nuclear weapons expert. He's definitely not a biological weapons expert, and I'm a little concerned to hear him talking about uncovering a biological weapons program when it was the great David Kaye who, as an NBC News analyst in April, stood before the world pointing out these so-called mobile biological labs and telling us definitively, there's where the fermentation unit is. This is where they brew up the biological agent. This is where they transfer it. And he was making it all up. It did none of that. It was incapable of doing that. And I think that's pretty much what we're going to get when he reports. The Iraqi scientists who are in U.S. custody have been adamant about, one thing in particular, and that's that there is no weapons of mass destruction program. It had been eliminated. So David Kaye is putting together a case that appears to be cobbled from documentary sources and human sources, walk-ins. None of these walk-ins are going to be key scientists. They're going to be, minor engineers who I think have other agendas going on here and historically aren't telling the truth. These are the kind of people that Ahmed Chalabi and the Iraqi National Congress were famous for bringing forward to, my inspection regime when I was there, to the CIA, to Judy Miller of the New York Times. She's noted to her editors that her sources are primarily drawn from the Iraqi National Congress, which means that they are fabricators and liars, and the New York Times has been printing it as though it's fact. And I'm afraid that David Kaye is going to be presenting things as if they're fact. He will not present physical evidence of a biological weapons program. He will be presenting a document-based circumstantial case with a lot of human statements that cannot be sustained with, factual solid evidence.
Yeah. I want to pursue that a little farther. And particularly, there was a real interesting interview on, as I recall, NBC. Yeah, on NBC News with Tom Brokaw and David Kaye, in which a fascinating little bit of sleight of mouth happened that I want to share with you. But first, as a little background for our listeners, I heard you talk about this at a talk you gave in Seattle that I attended 2 years ago, as I recall, or, just before the war. And it was startling to me. It was a revelation to me. I had not realized before I heard you talk about it that I had been led to believe, or that I think most Americans have been led to believe, that you and the other inspectors throughout the 90s, throughout the Clinton administration years, most of us thought that you were just going around looking at stuff. And in fact, you described in that speech an aggressive program destroying Saddam's weapons. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Well, sure. I mean, it was several phases. The Iraqis were required early on to declare all of their weapons and weapons capabilities to the inspectors, and the inspection program was supposed to be a simple matter of verification, checking it off, making right. sure that it was, in fact, there, and then supervising its destruction. Nothing too aggressive about that. Mm-hmm. But the Iraqis chose to lie, to hold on to a significant quantity of their chemical and ballistic missile capabilities, and not to declare at all their nuclear and biological weapons capability. And this forced the inspectors to, you know, transform the nature of our investigation. It became a very aggressive forensic-type investigation where we were looking for evidence of, you know, crimes having been committed, weapons having been produced, weapons capabilities hidden. And it took us not only to Iraq, but around the world. It was very much an intelligence-based, intelligence-driven operation where we had to spend a lot of time in the shadows digging up this information. And then, because we had to keep it secret from the Iraqis, they could not know what we were up to, we would put together teams in secret, fly them into Baghdad, come up with deception stories to the Iraqis, and then strike when they weren't suspecting us. And it was very successful. We had a tremendous track record. By 1996, we had destroyed 100% of the factories used by Iraq to produce weapons of mass destruction, including all of the associated production equipment. We were monitoring the totality of Iraq's industrial infrastructure that remained to ensure that not only the Iraq didn't retain prohibited capability but wasn't reconstituting it, and we could account for 90 to 95% of the product that had been produced by those factories. We couldn't get everything. One of the main reasons why we couldn't account for everything is that the Iraqis had a program. Once they realized how hot on their trail we were, they decided to destroy everything and cover the evidence, you know, destroy the evidence and deny having committed a crime. We were able to prove that they had, in fact, committed a crime, but now that they destroyed the evidence, we had a difficult time reconstructing that destruction, and we were unable to confirm the final disposition of, you know, some critical elements of VX nerve agent, anthrax, et cetera. But, you know, what I've told people is it really doesn't matter because what we can't confirm is destroyed can't exist today. Anthrax, even if Iraq had produced it and hidden it from us, has a three-year shelf life. So the last production batch was in 1991. You do the math.
And the Bushkevites are all running around saying, well, we didn't, you know, they were never able to document all of it.
I agree with you guys. But it's irrelevant.
right. And okay, good. Okay. Pardon my interrupting.
No problem.
And so you guys actually were destroying weapons. You were destroying the factories that make the weapons. You were destroying chemical agents. You were destroying biological agents. What was the story with the nuclear stuff?
Well, you know, they didn't actually perfect their nuclear program in terms of producing a viable device. They had a good plan for it. They had the technology in place, and we eliminated that. Of the four categories of weaponry, chemical, biological, and nuclear, and ballistic missile, the nuclear was the most thoroughly eradicated. That's why I got very frustrated when I heard the Bush administration speak of, you know, an imminent Iraqi nuclear threat. It's the most absurd concept in the world. If they said imminent biological threat, I would still be skeptical, but it's something that I could believe. But knowing what is required to, you know, produce a nuclear weapon, the massive infrastructure, the massive investment, the total dedication and how impossible it is to do that in secrecy, there's no way it could be done. No, we destroyed the nuclear program. There's nothing left, nothing to worry
about. This is not something that you can hide under a rose bush. One of the folks in our chat room here asks why, if this was the case, and you were reporting this back to the Clinton administration, was it that in 1998, Bill Clinton, in that famous comment that he made that the Bushies have repeated so many times now, why did he say that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction?
He was lying. And this is the point. I mean, lying is a strong term. But, you know, when you hear the President of the United States, the Commander-in-Chief, the man who has all the facts at his fingertip, say he knows Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, that's a lie, because he certainly has no such knowledge.
Why was Clinton lying?
Pardon?
Why was Clinton lying about it?
Well, because Clinton had inherited a policy of regime removal from George Herbert Walker Bush, and Bill Clinton had signed off on a covert program to eliminate Saddam Hussein. Key to this covert program was continued containment of Iraq through economic sanctions that could only be sustained if the perception of Iraqi noncompliance with their weapons of mass destruction disarmament obligation could be had. So He would tell the world that these weapons existed. Therefore, Iraq is not in compliance. Sanctions would be maintained, and Saddam Hussein would be contained. It's as simple as that. The United States never had any intention of allowing the United Nations inspectors to come up with a finding of compliance. Even though we had, in fact, disarmed Iraq fundamentally by 1996, the United States would never accept that finding.
Under Bush 1, under Clinton, or under Bush 2? Under
all
of
those
circumstances,
all of them.
Yeah. Remarkable. We're going to a break here in about 15 seconds. We're talking with, I'm assuming you can hold on for a few minutes over the break and we can continue the conversation?
Yes,
great.
That'd be no problem.
We're speaking with Scott Ritter. Scott Ritter, the author of Endgame, Solving the Iraqi Problem Once and for All, former UNSCOM investigator in Iraq. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. If you have a question for Scott Ritter, 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937 is the number. You can drop into our chat room. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You're kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Can we hope to achieve real progress while corporations wield control over our government and many civic institutions? At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we believe revoking illegitimate corporate power is a prerequisite for making genuine progress on the issues that affect us all. If you'd like to help restore citizen authority over corporations, get involved. Visit us at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick out furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Yes, I'm calling up
about the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off...
Why?
...is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Where has all the power gone? Long time hassling. Where has all the power gone? Make mine to go. Where has all the power gone? Ask the U.S. everyone. What will they ever earn?
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking with Scott Ritter, also the author of Frontier Justice, Weapons of Mass Destruction and the Bushwhacking of America, his most recent book. And, Scott, we've got three callers on the line with questions for you here, and I wanted to get into this thing also with you about weapons versus weapons programs. But first, Tony in Washington, D.C. has a question for you. Tony, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having this show, and Scott, thank you for sticking to your conviction as a loyal American and, in my opinion, as a good Christian should. My question is this. Is this why I'm trying to connect the dots. It seemed like why they were doing the extraordinary abuses to the combatants in Guantanamo Bay, trying to cipher information, you know, having them sit, kneel down in the sun with bags over their heads and solely on Geneva-like treatment to these so-called combatants. Can you give me a little insight on that now to take my question off the air? Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Scott?
Well, it's something that worries me. I have to say that, like you, I'm frustrated by the perception of what's happening in Guantanamo, and I'm ignorant about the reality. I don't know what's happening. I want to know what's happening because, you know, I'm an American citizen. This is my country. My government works for me, and I don't appreciate this wall of secrecy. I don't accept the fact that, you know, the so-called war on terror gives the American military a right to treat people in an inhumane fashion and torture them. There is no imminent threat of attack. I could understand if we felt that, you know, Al-Qaeda had a nuclear weapon and they were going to detonate it in New York City in the next 48 hours unless we could extract some intelligence from a captured suspect. I could understand extreme methodologies in that case. But, you know, we're at yellow alert. We're not, you know, we're not under imminent attack. So why do we dehumanize these people? It's not just Guantanamo Bay. It's what we're doing in Iraq right now. We are doing the same thing. And I guarantee you we wouldn't be hooding them and cuffing them and treating them like this if these were white Christians in Europe. You know, it seems to me that we have a definite racial aspect, a racist aspect to our policies. We've declared war not on terror, but it appears on Islam. And, you know, this is not going to, you know, do well in terms of getting the Iraqi people to be sympathetic to our presence in Iraq, getting the Arab world to be sympathetic to our presence in the Middle East, getting the Islamic world to be sympathetic about our global presence. How we treat these people, even the bad guys, how we treat them is a reflection on our society. And as an American, it doesn't reflect well on me.
Yeah, I agree. Well said, Scott. And you're speaking as a Republican or as a former Republican?
Well, I'm still registered as a Republican, but I speak as an American. My political affiliations are, you know, way down on the totem pole in terms of what defines me.
Great. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. David in San Francisco is on the line. David, we got a break coming up in about a minute and a half. It's a relatively short break, so a quick question for Scott.
Yeah, had you ever met David Kelly? Do you have any comments on specifically what do you think's going on with that situation?
And you mean David Kaye?
If I could stay on the phone, okay. I've disconnected my modem. Thanks.
Well, David Kelly, I think, is who he's talking about, the British scientist who committed suicide.
Oh, yeah, okay.
England. I know David Kelly, or I knew David Kelly. You know, I haven't seen him in 4 years or 5 years since my resignation in 1998, but prior to that... you know, we were colleagues. I was an intelligence guy. He was a biological weapons guy. And we would, you know, meet up in Baghdad, meet up in New York, meet up in Bahrain. And, and he's somebody I had a tremendous amount of respect for. This is a very aggressive investigator, a quiet man, but a core of steel who went after the Iraqis hard. He wasn't, you know, someone to take it easy on Saddam. So when I hear reports that, you know, he's also a man with great integrity, he would hold everybody accountable to the truth. And when I hear reports that he was holding his own government accountable for the truth, it's something that I believe is reflective of David Kelly, and I'm proud of him, and I just wish he was still with us today.
Yeah, me too. Scott, can you stick around for through this break for a few more minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Great, okay. Scott Ritter here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, Benji in Atlanta. Hang on, we'll get to your call right after this break. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
With about 5 weeks remaining before contracts between the United Auto Workers and GM, Ford, and Daimler Chrysler expire, negotiations continue over controversial topics like job security, which the UAW had indicated was its top priority. That priority may have changed with regard to negotiations involving Daimler Chrysler. The UAW is pushing now to allow union workers to transfer to non-union plants in the southern United States. The hope is by seeding those plants with union workers, they can convince the rest of the workforce to join the UAW as well. If the scheme works, it could bring thousands of new members to the union, and the UAW is prepared to transfer workers in batches ranging from 200 to 600 people.
Public sector workers in Zambia are in the midst of a three-day nationwide strike today, pressuring their government to make do on its promise of wage and benefit increases. After months of negotiations with union leaders last April, the government finally agreed to salary increases and housing allowances for 120,000 public workers. But President Levy Mwanawasa reneged on the deal under pressure from the International Monetary Fund, which threatened to withhold aid from Zambia unless the government cut into a budget deficit. The Civil Servants Union of Zambia says it'll ratchet up future work stoppages into an indefinite strike unless workers receive their promised raises.
Just as South Korea's largest automaker, Hyundai, settles a crippling strike with a generous contract offer, workers at its sister company, Kia, the number two car company, are gearing up for their own walkouts. They, too, want a pay raise and a five-day work week and staged a day-long strike on Saturday. They've scheduled more partial strikes for this week and say if the company doesn't implement the five-day work week immediately, they'll start extended strike action next weekend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I saw her today at the reception. A glass of wine in her hand.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're speaking with Scott Ritter, the author of, Weapons of Mass Destruction and the Bushwhacking of America, his most recent book. And Scott, in our chat room, there's somebody had commented about the some of the civilian contractors, apparently Halliburton, who are not fulfilling contracts to provide food, showers, latrines, things like that, to the GIs over there. And this person says, can you ask Scott about the morale of both the troops and the Iraqi civilians? Your thoughts on that? And then we've got four calls stacked up here for you, too.
Well, I mean, again, this is only as an observer. It's not as though I'm in constant contact with the troops. I do have some contacts in the Iraqi community who have, you know, we've maintained contact since the war. I have to tell you that, you know, in regards to the troops, these are professional soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines who are doing a job, but, you know, they'll do anything for their country as long as they believe in it. I think people are starting to realize that the president lied to them and misled them, that this wasn't about liberating Iraq. The Iraqi people aren't viewing them as liberators. They're viewing them as occupiers. And these are American boys and girls who like to be seen as the good guys. And now they're in a country and they're being spat on and shot at and treated poorly. Not all of them. There's still Iraqis who treat them well. But by and large, these are people who aren't walking the streets of Baghdad freely. They're wearing full combat gear. You tell me how long after our occupation of Germany we continued to wear full combat gear, and it was a matter of weeks before we took it off and we were walking around in garrison equipment. We're still at war in Iraq. We're going to be at war the entire time we're there, and this has a devastating impact on morale, especially for those troops who led the charge on Baghdad. And for the Iraqi people, yeah, they're glad Saddam's gone. But I'll tell you what, unless you were, you know, one of the political prisoners or the Shia who rose up down south or, you know, the Kurds up north, for the people in Baghdad and in the Sunni towns, they never had armed troops cordon off their block, kick down the doors in the middle of the night, drag the men out, hood them, handcuff them, beat them in front of the women and children, frisk the women down aggressively, then walk away, set up roadblocks and shoot, you know, shoot cars full of civilians dead in the streets. You know, that didn't happen, and this is why many Sunnis are saying, you know, we'd rather have Saddam back. Now, I'm sure they don't mean that, but what they're really saying is, you know, the Americans are brutal occupiers, and we don't want them here, and I think the morale is devastated. You know, Iraq had one of the highest standards of living in the Middle East in the 1980s under Saddam Hussein, and now, thanks to the American, you know, 12 years of American-sponsored sanctions, ongoing bombing, and now this occupation, they don't have electricity, clean water, medicine, health care, education system, nothing. All that's gone.
Right. Jim in Oklahoma has a question for you, Scott. Jim has called 1-800-TALK. Yes, Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Great. How are you?
Good.
Question. The knowledge that you have about the Iraqi weapons program, and then the knowledge that you have about the fabricated speech that Bush gave the country before he went to war, and those 16 words that keep coming up, my question is what is so important that he has to put American lives at risk and death and lie to the entire country? What is so important, and what is this administration up to? And if you could just address that, you may have already answered it, but if you could just address that, I would appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, I think the first thing we have to recognize about the war with Iraq is that it was not a war of necessity. You know, this isn't going up against Adolf Hitler or Imperial Japan. We weren't attacked. We weren't under imminent risk. This was very much an elective war. We chose to go to war. So why would we choose to go to war with Iraq? Clearly, it's not because Iraq posed a threat. We now know that the weapons of mass destruction was a lie. It was told to deceive the American public. Why do we need to deceive the American public? Because the Bush administration is implementing something that, if held up to the scrutiny of the American public, would not be accepted, and that is a vision of global domination, American imperialism, that I don't believe is reflective of the values and ideals of the majority of Americans. It is the ideology of a handful of people who, prior to the election of George W. Bush, clustered together under the rubric of the Project for a New American Century, neoconservative ideologues who seek to take advantage of America's unique position in the world, our power militarily and economically, to impose our will on the rest of the world. This is not the American way of doing business. George Bush has used the events of September 11, 2001, to prey upon the fear and ignorance of the American people, to make them feel as though there's an imminent threat of attack, so that they close an eye to the frontal assault on the Constitution that he's waging, to the fact that he's violating international law. And this is what's happening here. The president lied to us because we wouldn't stand for the truth. And now that we know he's lied, we, the people of the United States of America, must hold him accountable, or we lose the right to call ourselves citizens of a democratic republic.
Amen. And hopefully that'll happen in a big way in November of 2004. Benji in Atlanta's on the line with a question for Scott Ritter. Benji, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. I get my news from various sources, but I wanted, Scott, if you could, to talk a little bit about his relationship with the larger networks, of course, CNN and the like. And
his that you're talking about?
I'm sorry?
Benji. The his that you're talking about, you mean Scott's relationship with the networks?
Scott's relationship with the larger networks. Why it is that even, say, you know, before a year ago, when I'm sure his world was put upside down, but before a year ago, it seemed like I would catch an interview here and there, and it was so valuable what he had to say, but I was wondering, why am I only hearing this once in a while and then a very brief moment, and then it was sort of marginalized, and it just never went anywhere. And I just don't understand why I have to turn to sort of more arcane radio stations to try to find, you know, interviews with Scott Ritter. It's great to hear him. I just wonder.
Got it, Benji. Okay, thank you. Scott, your thoughts on that. Has there been a press blackout on Scott Ritter?
Well, there has been, sadly. You know, the press, when you know, I'm about holding the president accountable for what he said and what he's done. That's what a democracy is about. But there's other people who are culpable as well. I believe that the Congress of the United States is culpable and must be held accountable for abrogating their constitutional responsibilities regarding, declaring war. And I believe the press is culpable. They bought into the president's message without once asking the questions that needed to be asked. I mean, yes, now people are starting to probe. People are demanding, you know, to know more about the intelligence. But after the war isn't the time to do that. Before the war was. But we have to remember that mainstream media today is corporate controlled. And these corporations spend a great deal of money lining the pockets of both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and during elections to do their bidding. And it's a quid pro quo relationship. You stroke General Electric, General Electric will make sure that NBC News doesn't embarrass you. It doesn't go out of the way to embarrass. And the last thing.
And General Electric is a major defense contractor as well.
They're also a major defense contractor.
Yeah,
Rupert Murdoch has tremendous political interests in terms of pushing a neoconservative agenda. So I would appear on news stations because they couldn't ignore me. But I would come up, they would say, see, we've brought on an opposing point of view. But there would never be the kind of in-depth follow-up that is required to have to generate the kind of debate, discussion, and dialogue that makes a democracy function. I believe that the media has failed the American people egregiously, and it's high time the American people hold the media accountable. And that whether that is boycotting advertisers that that give the media outlets their money or whatever, but we have to let the producers and the editors and the people who run these things know that they have not served the American people or American democracy well in the build-up to this war.
And I think they're starting to get that message. We're seeing, you know, programs like this and Mike's programs that are carried on this network and other networks that are starting to challenge the official lines are actually getting picked up by more and more stations all across the country. There's a real groundswell happening. Steve in Santa Fe is on the line with a question for you, Scott. Steve, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Your thoughts, your question?
Well, thank you for taking my call. It's not a question. I just want to tell Scott that thank him for his patriotism and for his service to this nation. I really wish there was a whole lot more Scott Ritters in this world.
Well said, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Geez, that's very nice.
Yeah, I agree. Alan in California is on the line with a question for Scott. Alan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
I have actually a couple of quick questions. The first one is for Scott. The Pentagon has officially been putting forward the view that the armed resistance against the American-British occupation is the work of remnants of the Saddam regime, the Ba'athist remnants. And I was wondering what evidence there is to support that view or an alternative view that there's a broader resistance. That's
like a nationalist uprising, people just saying, "Hey, you know, we don't, you know, we want our country back," something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like I'm just wondering, what is the evidence? I mean, have they been capturing these people and interrogating them and finding out who actually is organizing? But it seems like it's just
Scott,
on the basis.
Scott, do you know anything about that?
Well, what I know is that there is resistance, and it comes from a multitude of sources. And I also know this, that those who did the majority of the preparation for post-occupation resistance during the Saddam times have yet to initiate their resistance. The Special Republican Guard, the Saddam loyalists, you know, they have not engaged yet. They're not ready. What's happening right now is a grassroots movement. Islamists, nationalists, Sunni loyalists. You know, we don't yet have the Shia, but they're getting frustrated, and we haven't yet seen the Kurds come out, but they're going to get frustrated. You know, but we, again, the Bush administration has to maintain the perception of liberation. You can't say you're liberating a nation that has a popular uprising against you. Plus, once you acknowledge that it's a, you know, grassroots-based movement, opposition movement, history has shown that no occupying power has ever successfully defeated a genuine popular uprising that has widespread support. So we can't define it that way. We have to come up with alternatives. So it's, you know, the diehard resistance from Saddam's regime, or, because that's even hard to justify sometimes, Al-Qaeda. We're now going to blame everything on Al-Qaeda. And
right,
that
which is a great way of getting the phrase Al-Qaeda into a sentence along with the word Iraq, which George Bush keeps looking for opportunities to do.
Well, they do it all the time, and again, it's like weapons of mass destruction. That's something that had absolutely no, you know, substance. There's no viable, factual evidence to back up any of the allegations that there was a linkage between Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
Okay. Alan, thank you very much for that call. Scott in Tennessee has a question for Scott Ritter. Scott, welcome.
Yes. Hello, Mr. Ritter.
Hello.
I just wanted to ask you a question, if you'd heard anything about the CIA attempt to plant weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
I've read a story. I'm sure there's more than one story out there. Here's the problem I have with that. Knowing what it would take, I mean, remember, I come at it from the investigatory side of the story, so I know when I do a forensic investigation what I'm looking for, how to reverse engineer, you know, the evidence we're gathering to point us in a certain direction. If you plant things, it's virtually impossible to do it in a manner that would be able to escape that kind of forensic investigation.
Well, I just thought it was interesting that Tony Blair and Bush both delivered this definitive speech that they were absolutely certain the weapons were about to be found. It was only a few days, really, before these CIA agents that were making the so-called secret delivery were all killed. And I just find it really interesting. This woman named Nelda Rogers came forward, and she actually said she's a Defense Department debriefer, and she actually said she was afraid for her life because I don't know why, but she said she came forward with it because she felt if she went public, she might not be killed.
Yeah.
It's just an
spooky
interesting
stuff.
Story.
Well,
I thought maybe you might find it kind of interesting.
We Americans should be demanding, you know, they say the best disinfected is sunlight. And we have a massive infection taking place right now when it comes to American credibility in Iraq. Every aspect of what the Bush administration has done in regards to Iraq is surrounded by distortions of truth, misrepresentations, fabrications, lies. We need the truth, and we should be demanding the truth. And any member of Congress that isn't right now supportive of a full investigation into this, a bipartisan, non-political investigation, we just want the truth, Mr. President. And any member of Congress who isn't for that should not have the, you know, privilege and honor of representing the American people, because it's not about politics now. Americans are dying. We're killing people over there. It's not about defending our country. It's about defending our reputation. It's about defending the values, our moral standing. And we need the truth. We must demand the truth. And once that comes out, we'll be able to sort through the wheat and the chaff.
Yeah. Scott, we're speaking with Scott Ritter right now here on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 12 minutes before the hour, and we've got about 2 minutes left. And Scott, I've noticed that Scott Ritter is the author of Frontier Justice, Weapons of Mass Destruction, the Bushwhacking of America. And I've noticed, I noticed in this interview, Tom Brokaw of David Kay, that they started out talking about weapons of mass destruction. And then halfway into this discussion, David Kay starts saying, it's going to lead us to unwrapping the weapons of mass destruction program. And then he says, they're actually involved in a weapons program. And then he says, there's a chemical program. And then he gets Brokaw. Brokaw says, well, I gather, in fact, there is a program and it's substantial. And Kay has succeeded in the course of this 10-minute conversation with Brokaw to get him to stop talking about weapons of mass destruction and start talking about programs. Do you see this as the transition that's going to happen? And we've got about a minute left here.
Well, it's already happened. The President of the United States has said that we're looking for programs, that the weapons have probably been destroyed. Rumsfeld is saying that. And it may not even be programs that existed prior to the war. You know, we may be talking about programs that existed back in the 1990s. This is the problem. You see, there will be no hard, factually based, substantive evidence brought forward. It's going to be circumstantial, and it's going to be very much one-sided. I'm going to have a field day taking David Kay apart and taking apart the stories that are coming out, because I happen to be aware of the facts, and I'm certain that what he will be presenting will not be the facts. It will be, you know, Judy Miller-like New York Times reporting, with human sources wearing nondescript clothing with a baseball cap viewed from 300 meters away. Not what we use to sustain going to war. We need hard evidence, and we're not going to get it.
There you go. Scott, we're out of time here. Thank you very much for being on the program. Do you have a website real quickly that people can find out more information?
No, I probably need to get one, but I don't have it.
Okay, great. But people can find your book in bookstores and on Amazon.com and whatnot. Scott Ritter, thank you very much for being on the program. I truly appreciate it. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Talk Radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this break.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Another lending success story from LendingTree.com.
I knew a home equity line of credit was a good idea, but I didn't want the hassle of going to a bank, so instead I went to LendingTree.com. A marketplace of banks and lenders competed over me, and I got a really low rate. A really low rate without setting foot in a bank. Good idea, right?
Visit LendingTree.com or call 1-800-555-TREE. When banks compete, you win at LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. For additional information or state license disclosures, visit our website at LendingTree.com.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was as straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The General helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
The Tom Hartman.
Hartman Show.
The computerized voting machines in the last election, our question is the theft of your vote. On our chat room here, Brainshrub points out that H is the eighth letter of the alphabet, A is the first letter of the alphabet. So if you take that 18181, the exact number of votes that three different candidates in one county in Texas got on these computerized voting machines, and you simply convert it to letters, it becomes... Is it a conspiracy or a coincidence?
Okay, first of all, I wanted to say congratulations. We were elected to the White House by one of the narrowest margins in history. 63% of registered voters...
Wait a second. You wanted me to poll registered voters?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Sitting in the morning sun, I'll be sitting when the evening comes, watching the ships roll in, and then I'll watch them roll away again, yeah. I'm sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the tide.
You know, every now and then we need a reminder, like Otis Redding, that life goes on. You know, things are still... Life goes on, and we need to slow down every now and then, look around, take a deep breath, and go, whew, you know, this life is such a gift. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont, with help from Joe McPherson in Atlanta, Georgia. And engineered by Steph Stryker in Detroit. Many thanks for that. This late breaking news from Andy Borowitz, theborowitzreport.com. And I quote, moments after stepping down from the presidency of Liberia today, Charles Taylor shocked the world by refusing exile in Nigeria and instead boarding a direct flight to California. While Mr. Taylor was evasive when reporters asked him what he planned to do in the Golden State, the ex-president made a veiled reference to, quote, having the signatures and necessary filing fee to accomplish his immediate goals, end quote. Charles Taylor lacks the movie experience necessary to govern this state, says Arnold Schwarzenegger during a campaign stop in San Diego. Embattled Governor Gray Davis, meanwhile, argued that the influx of porn stars into the gubernatorial race could mean that California's booming pornography industry might face a dangerous shortage of on-screen performers in the near term. But Hank Barzo, chairman of the California chapter of the American Association of Pornography Producers, says his organization was aggressively recruiting new porn stars, mainly from the ranks of former politicians. Thanks to Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. I've been wanting to get that in all day. He's good. He's really good. So is Robert Novak right? Weapons of mass destruction coming? I mean, apparently he was correct when he outed the CIA agent wife of Joe Wilson, and in doing so apparently violated several federal felony laws along with two administration officials. That's going to be an interesting one. The bottom line, the point of all this, I think, whether you were for the war, against the war, whether you like Bush or you don't, all of these things, the bottom line is that we need to be engaged in our political processes here in the United States. We still have, still intact, to a large extent, maybe I'm an idealist, but I really believe this. My experience is that this is real. We still have intact a form of government that is worth rescuing, saving, participating in, making fully representative. So, you know, get active. Get out there. Participate. Join in. And come back tomorrow. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. See you then.
This ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.